Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, how's it going today?
It's going well, man. I watched both games from last night. It actually kind of looked like real football, and it's right around the corner, so I'm pretty pumped.
Exactly. We're in that week three of the preseason, the dress rehearsal, as everyone says. We get to see more of the starters and less of the players that are likely to end up on the street. So, yeah, it definitely feels like more like real football, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, we've got a great guest today, and it's another Matt. Gosh, this is our third or fourth. Too many Matts sometimes. We need more Ryans on the show. But we do have today Matt Friedman. He's the editor-in-chief at Fantasy Labs. Also does a ton of work with the podcast team over at RotoViz Radio. Matt, how's it going today?
It's going well. Thanks for having me. And, yeah, thinking of RotoViz Radio, it's Matt Williams was one of our earlier guests, and Ryan, you were also one of our earlier guests, so it's nice to be on your show. And I remember, I guess a year or so ago, I thought it was so cool when you two teamed up together to do a show. I thought it was a fantastic combination.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. This is actually episode number 80, so yeah, we're about a year and a half in, but we've had a good time so far, and hopefully we'll continue that today. Matt, for Fantasy Labs, you have written a ton of really in-depth team previews, and I know those are slanted a little bit more towards the DFS crowd for your readers over at Fantasy Labs, but I think there's a lot to learn for seasonal players, for dynasty players. Just talk a little bit, give us kind of an intro about those team previews and what they include.
Yeah, so the desire was actually to make those, we are a daily fantasy sports site, but to go away from just strictly daily to thinking about football as a game and how these players and these teams might project into the 2017 season. So that really is primarily what it's focused on, starting to look what the season means for this team in terms of like its franchise trajectory. The tendencies of the head coach and the offensive play caller, the roster changes, that's something that's really important that I think a lot of people, it's not that they even dismiss the importance of that, but I think a lot of people don't appreciate the significance of, three new offensive linemen or something like that. And then, of course, at that point, starting to look more deeply at the range of outcomes for particular fantasy relevant players and even some players who might not seem fantasy relevant, but I think they are because they're deeper guys who might emerge and if we're thinking of this in a dynasty perspective, some great dynasty stashes. And then kind of just wrapping it up by thinking about from a Vegas perspective, how some of these teams might look in terms of the Vegas lines and prop bets and stuff like that.
Yeah, there really is a little bit of something for everyone, no matter what your favorite type of fantasy game is, something for you there, some valuable information. One thing that really caught my eye in those articles is your focus on the play callers and how that can affect players and player performances, which in some way is obvious, but at the same time, it's something that a lot of fantasy players don't really pay much attention to. I was glad to see your work with that. I know a couple other guys in the industry, Scott Barrett and Josh Hermsmeyer, have both been doing some work with that as well. What made you want to include that? And to you, what makes that so important and something fantasy players should pay attention to?
Well, I mean, so volume, for one thing, is so important. And volume is primarily dictated by pace of play and by the run split, the pass run ratio. And both of those are highly linked to the play caller. And so if you think about any given game, you can't really determine what the other team is going to do. What you can really only determine is what the play caller is likely to do based on what he's done in the past. And so it seemed very obvious to me to start thinking about not just what do players tend to do, but what do play callers tend to do with their players? Because I think that's a better way of thinking about what players might do in the future. And also from a writer standpoint, I didn't want to talk too much about particular players because situations change, right? So Sammy Watkins gets traded, right? So stuff like that happens. But Rick Dennison, what he's done in the past with his wide receivers, that's always going to stay the same. So I could write some about what what an offensive play caller had done with his players, and that was always going to be relevant throughout the preseason.
I think that's really good information because, I mean, obviously I'm sure you found tendencies like, you know, a Shanahan Kubiak offense wants a Brandon Marshall, Andre Johnson, Julio type true number one to make it all go, or this offense throws their backs a lot more, or these guys feature the tight end in the red zone. Or I'm sure you found a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't know about that stuff unless you start looking for it, you know? And so just kind of think about this a little bit more, like to give an example, like Anthony Lynn in San Diego, running back coach background, his team runs the ball, you know, but he's been the running back coach for a lot of successful backfields and runners. I mean, in San Diego, like if I had to bet, they're going to run the ball a lot. And you can maybe get a sense of how certain things will go based on the players, but unless you know the background of the play callers and their history coming up through the league and what they've done before, you know, you're, I think, operating not anywhere close to peak capacity.
So, Matt, I know you headed this project over there at Fantasy Labs. You wrote, I think, 13 of these team previews yourself and kind of guided the others, edited a lot of the others. We're going to focus today on the ones that you wrote. And let's start with the Falcons. It seems like everyone knows there's going to be this regression, especially for Matt Ryan, Tevin Coleman. Everybody is talking about that this season. A lot of that has to do with the loss of Shanahan there. What about Devontae Freeman, though? He's become the highest paid running back in football now. He got his big payday. Do you see regression from him as well, or can he continue to maintain even if the offense overall sees a dip?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's going to be some regression there for him. I think they're going to want to continue to use him as a receiver, to give him, you know, sort of like a 65-35 split with Tevin Coleman. I think one of the big – I mean, people – so two things. One, I think they're focusing a lot on the move from Shanahan, which makes sense, but I don't think they're focusing as much on Sarkisian, the new play caller. And with him, a big thing is, one, can he manage the zone blocking scheme the way that Shanahan did? And then two – even if he does keep Shanahan's offense, which he says he's going to do, but even if he can be successful in keeping it, he's never called a play in the NFL before. So, like, he's a rookie NFL play caller. Can he make the right calls at the right time to help the team sustain drives? I think a lot of what happens with the Falcons this year will be determined by the success or lack thereof of Steve Sarkisian. And I'm doubtful that he can, one, transition smoothly to the NFL. It's not easy. It's a hard, you know, it's a hard league. And then two, be able to run another guy's offensive system as well as that other guy did.
Matt, I'm kind of skeptical of the Falcons in general, just from that perspective. Just because I think that the coaching play calling has to go backwards. I mean, Shanahan did it at a historical level. And then the other thing I always go back to the Falcons was their starting five offensive linemen missed like zero snaps all year. That's not going to happen again.
Right. Right. Yeah. They were very lucky up front. One thing that I think also could factor into this and that might give Devontae Freeman a little more help is that the defense, I think, should be better. It seems as if they are a unit on the rise. So if they can play a little bit better, and then maybe that gives the offense a situation where they don't need to throw the ball so much. So Freeman maybe gets some more carries. That might be something he has going in his favor. But still, I mean, that's not something that you really want to bet on when the entire unit as a whole is moving backwards.
So, Matt, in your article, you did mention that regression, the expected touchdown regression from Tevin Coleman. But you also alluded to the fact that you simply think he's a better running back than Freeman.
Yeah.
So how can dynasty owners balance this new long-term deal that Freeman got with the talent of Tevin Coleman? Is it going to be another Stuart Dewell situation where these two just kind of cancel each other out for years to come? Can Coleman get out of there? How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, so I think right now it's a bad time to buy either one, because I think both of them probably have inflated prices because of the success of last season. And then Freeman inflated because he's going to be there for longer. Coleman inflated because he had that fantastic touchdown production. I guess long term, if I had to be on one of these guys, probably Freeman, just because I think he's probably locked in a little bit more to that offense. And we don't know what's happening with Coleman long term. Like, it's possible he's there another 2 years, has that that kind of second string production where he's efficient, but he never gets the job, and then he signs with some team that is horrible. You know, like, that's a possibility. Like, he goes like the Brandon Tate route or something like that. So I don't know. I'm kind of off of both of these guys in Dynasty if you don't already own them.
See, I'm kind of with you that Coleman's a really intriguing player, and I almost feel like him and Derrick Henry have some similarities in that for redraft, they're like the ultimate handcuff. If their guy goes down, they go crazy, but they're probably blocked for a little while. But are they necessarily going to go to a bad team? I mean, I think Henry's a better chance of just being the man in Tennessee because they're not going to sign Murray long term, but Coleman almost has to leave town to be worth something.
I 100% agree with all that. I think Coleman, the long-term play with him is, I mean, and you don't want to say this, but either hoping for some sort of like Freeman injury or something, or thinking that he's going to be out of there within a couple of years. And with Henry, yeah, I think Henry is the long-term guy. I think this is probably the last year of Murray really being the workhorse in Tennessee.
Let's move on to Baltimore now. This team is not as much fun to talk about from a fantasy perspective. It seems like we've already seen the injuries piling up for the Ravens as it really has the past couple of years. But what jumps out to me when I look at that roster are so many players that just continue to frustrate dynasty owners. We keep them on our roster, but they have failed to live up to that hype. Kenneth Dixon comes to mind, Breshad Perriman, Max Williams. All of those guys have dealt with injuries in their short careers and just haven't lived up to the draft pick capital that we spent on them. Is there hope for any of those three, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, they're all question marks. So the thing with Breshad Perriman is, and it's hard to do this, but so the people who drafted him originally in Dynasty Leagues, right, they've been holding him for 2 years now. So it's really hard for them just to discount that first year and think of the second year, but his first active season, to think of that as kind of his redshirt rookie year, right? Because they're 2 years into this. But if you just think of what he did in his first year of action, it wasn't bad. You know, like if you had a first round wide receiver in general who had around 500 yards receiving, you wouldn't be all that displeased. You wouldn't think like, okay, this guy's definitely a super future star. A future superstar, but you would think that it's possible he could continue to progress and give you some production later. So I think there is some hope with Perriman, but people, it's hard for them to see it just because they've been holding on to him for 2 years. Max Williams, yeah, that's a tough situation because of the knee injuries, which were apparently catastrophic. He entered the league as a 21-year-old with great college production. I mean, I think there still might be something there, especially because, I mean, he has just Ben Watson ahead of him on the depth chart. You know, there is some opportunity there. The guy I'm actually kind of interested in, and I hate to say this, is Javorius Allen. You know, he's third on the depth chart right now. Danny Woodhead is having some issues. He's coming off of an ACL injury. He's older. Terrence West is, I think, in a precarious situation, maybe out of all the starting running backs, the most precarious situation in the league. Javorius Allen has the capability to be a three-down guy. He might not be a good runner, but I don't know if he's going to be any worse than Terrence West at running the football. And given that he can play on third down, we saw him as a rookie in the last five games of the season when he was the starter actually have top five production. It wasn't sexy production. It wasn't like good production. A lot of it was coming through the air, but we saw him do it. And this team might have to pass again pretty heavily this year. I don't know. I mean, if you can get Javorius Allen pretty cheap as a throw-in in some trade, I would like that. But otherwise, I mean, all of those guys are question marks. It's hard to be very bullish on them given what we see.
Yeah, and Dixon's a lot like how you described Perryman, where if you look at just what he did his first season on the field, that's okay. You know, there's promise there. But now it's you got to wait till year three to get anything out of him. He broke my heart. I mean, Perryman is in the process of breaking my heart, and Dixon broke my heart.
You know, I would actually like to get your perspective on this because I'm not a football film-watching guy. My belief on Perryman coming out was that he was kind of a one-trick guy, speedster, maybe not all that talented as a football player, but incredibly athletically gifted. And that's what propelled him into the first round. If not for the athleticism, like, I mean, I guess the question is this guy a good football player? I mean, like, can you guys talk about that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. But the athleticism to me is a lot closer, and this is extreme, to Julio Jones than it is to Mike Wallace, you know, like sure. Because he's big and strong and sure. Changes directions, he could become a true number one. And I thought in the meantime, he would be Mike Wallace, you know, like
yeah.
there was a baseline there that he'll catch bombs and, you know, and as he develops, he might hit huge for you.
Yeah, that I agree. I think that was always the hope with him, that he had Julio-esque type of athleticism and maybe he could become a force like that. Entering year three, it's so unknown. If you can get some of those guys as throw-ins on bigger trades where you don't feel as if you're leveraging everything on them alone, then right. I like it. But if you're trading something just for them, I think it's a lot harder.
Matt, let's look next at the Buffalo Bills. And this is obviously a team who has made a lot of changes just in the past couple of weeks, moving on from Sammy Watkins, Ronald Darby, and basically retooling with just weeks and weeks before the season starts. It certainly wouldn't be a surprise if Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy are gone by 2018. Maybe it wouldn't even be a surprise if they're gone before the season starts this year. We'll see how that plays out. For dynasty owners, should we just be chasing Zay Jones and Jonathan Williams there? What are you doing with the Bills?
So I'm invested in LeSean McCoy, so I probably should be trying – I mean, maybe should be trying to get his handcuff, but I think Jonathan Williams – he might be too hard to get at this point because I think people are seeing him as the potential running back of the future. But part of it is just a general strategy. I kind of don't like to go after handcuffs or backups unless I know that they are talented. And Williams is talented, but he was a sixth-round pick by a different regime. It's, you know, it's very possible that the Bills are horrible and then they draft a running back in the second or third round next year. And then Williams is a guy who means nothing. So I try not to get too excited about backups. Zay Jones, man, that's interesting. I would like your feedback on this. So one, I think that Jordan Matthews is set up very nicely in Buffalo. I might be in the minority in thinking that, but Rick Dennison historically has been able to use bigger bodied receivers pretty well. So starting with, in Denver back in the day, Javon Walker, and then going to Brandon Marshall, and then in Texas with Andre Johnson, and then Demaryius Thomas, it might not seem right to put Jordan Matthews in the same group with those guys. And that's very possible. But on that team, he's the closest thing that they have to those guys. And I think he has the same big body type of athleticism. So I could see him being peppered with targets the way that those guys were. I like his upside there. Zay Jones, I would like your feedback on this. I know that he is probably a good football player based on based on the receptions that he had last year, the receiving yards, and then especially that he has his athleticism with a good combination of size there. So he's probably a good football player. At the same time, I am absolutely flummoxed that a guy with those attributes and with the yardage and receiving had only 8 touchdowns last year. He's never been a touchdown scorer. And it could be acceptable if he didn't get red zone targets or red zone receptions, but he had 45 red zone targets his senior year. How does a guy with that many red zone targets have only 8 touchdowns? I don't know how that's possible, especially given all of the receptions and yards. And the only way I can kind of reconcile all of this is that one, and I just want to say also, this is in the context of an offense that was able to get touchdowns to Justin Hardy years before. But so, you know, maybe it's just some sort of weird freakish anomaly where he just for some reason didn't get touchdowns, or maybe he's not a good football player. I don't know which one it is. What do you guys think?
Matt and I have both kind of had our concerns about Zay Jones as well. And while others are putting him into the first round of rookie drafts, maybe even the middle of the first round in some cases, we've both been a little more cautious. I'm not sure what Matt has seen or maybe what his concerns are. But for me, it's a lot of what you're talking about. A little bit of box score scouting, to be honest. I didn't watch a ton of East Carolina. But yeah, so many targets, such a high volume, and so little touchdown production. It has to be a concern.
I mean, I have a theory on this, and I guess I like Matt's thoughts on it. So part of the theory is that defensive backs were playing off a little bit when they were further away from the end zone. And then as the field shrunk and coverage got tighter, he doesn't have the route running chops to separate in the, you know, in tight spaces in the red zone to be able to get open to score touchdowns. But that's just a speculation.
I don't think that's off base. I don't think he's very physically overwhelming. I know he tested well, but I don't think he runs by people for the long touchdowns, and I don't think he's particularly good at boxing out, being physical for the tight quarters touchdowns either. You know, you would think at East Carolina, he's not exactly at Bama, you know, that if you get that many targets and are catching that many passes – you got to end up in the end zone more than that. So I bet some of that's fluky from college, but that doesn't bode well for the NFL. The Bills scare me. I think the Bills are going to be one of the worst teams in the league. I think they're borderline punting for the future. Even Jordan Matthews, I've not been a big fan of his game. And I look at this team too. You said you're invested in McCoy. I would get off that boat as soon as I possibly can. I was actually just on Christopher Harris's podcast talking about who are some early round busts, and McCoy was top of my list. Like, for redraft, I'm not taking him in the first round. They're redoing that offensive scheme. And while I think he'll adapt well to the zone scheme, and he did it well with Chip Kelly, are those big, heavy offensive linemen going to pay the way the same way? I have my doubts. They're going to be asked to do things they're not so good at. And I also don't doubt that Peterman's a quarterback by week 12 when they're 2-10.
I think all that's possible. In fact, I'll say likely. I think the problem with McCoy is, so I've been invested in him for years in my longtime dynasty league. I think he's near impossible to trade because he's old. So you have to have the right type of trading partner. It has to be someone who's in position to get a championship and who thinks that they need just one more player, maybe one more running back. And they also have to be willing to overlook all of the risk in Buffalo. So I think it's a hard sell right now to get someone else to invest in McCoy. So if you have McCoy, I think you're kind of stuck with him.
But like, for redraft purposes, I'm shocked people are taking McCoy over Melvin Gordon and Jordan Howard. And
sure.
Yeah. I mean, so if there are people that are doing that in redraft, maybe you could sell them at this point. I don't know. I've never tried, but it seems difficult.
Yeah, I agree. I think in redraft, he's very risky. He's becoming riskier by the day. The more that we see Buffalo, as you say, like, they're punting on this season.
Yeah, Matt, you said they were borderline punting. They're blatantly punting.
Yeah.
I don't think they're even trying to hide it. And that's why, again, I think you were a little conservative on your week 12. Tyrod might get a month. or maybe even less. I don't know.
Jacksonville should be on the phone with him right this minute, or yes. Denver, or, yes. you know.
Yes.
But hey, before we go any further, I want to tell everyone about our good buddies at Harry's. Harry's makes some fantastic razor blades. I've been fortunate enough to use them now for some time. Before that, I used to only use an electric because blades would chew up my face. But the Harry's ones are different. I don't know what exactly they're doing, but they're doing it well. Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades. They'll give you their trial shave kit for free when you sign up at harrys.com/dynasty. All you have to pay for is shipping. Everything else is free. It's awesome. So Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why way over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's worldwide. Jeff and Andy, they're two ordinary dudes that were fed up with paying overpriced razors. They started Harry's to fix shaving, and I think they've done it. They bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blade-making experience to ensure the highest quality. All products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's offers their blades at half the price of the leading five-blade razor, selling directly to you over the internet. So claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free when you sign up. All you have to do is cover shipping, which isn't much. Your free trial includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, feel great in your hand, 5 precision engineer blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover to take it on the road. Get your free trial set up. Go to harrys.com/dynasty right now. That's harrys.com/dynasty.
Matt, the next team up is Carolina. To me, this looks like a team intent on making some pretty drastic changes to their offense. To me, evidence of that is the addition of Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel. How do you see that team playing out, those changes mixing in with Cam Newton's strengths and his weaknesses?
Yeah, I like it. I like the change. I think that they realize Cam throwing downfield to Devin Funchess and Kelvin Benjamin hasn't been as efficient as they would have hoped. And so I think if you start to mix in some guys who are dynamic in short spaces, and I think that's Curtis Samuel and Christian McCaffrey to a T, that will also help what they maybe want to do downfield with Kelvin Benjamin. I really liked both of those selections. I think it's great to pair an exciting running back, an exciting wide receiver with, you know, one of the best playmaking quarterbacks in the league. So, yeah, I don't know what you guys think about this comparison, but before Christian McCaffrey was selected, on the basis of, you know, implied draft position and his type of production, his volume, his athleticism, I thought he was the closest thing to LeSean McCoy that we had seen since LeSean McCoy. I don't know what you better think about receiver. And honestly, like more athletic. You know, it's hard to say that someone will have LeSean McCoy type of success in the league. You know, I mean that's rare. But he, as a prospect, looked LeSean McCoy-esque, except honestly, probably better.
I don't know that he's as dynamic, highlight reel, you know, make you miss in space vision, but few are. And plus, McCoy went to Pitt. That makes him cooler. one note on the Panthers is I just finished watching their game against the Jags today. I don't want to like Kelvin Benjamin, and I kind of don't want to like Funchess. But both those guys, especially Benjamin, look really good so far this year.
One thing I would like to point out about Benjamin, if you remove the second season that he missed, so you just look at his two active seasons and you compare those to the first two seasons of Mike Evans, they look pretty comparable in terms of production. It's much closer than anyone would think. And that's not to say that Kelvin Benjamin is going to take a Mike Evans-esque type of, you know, third season. But I think Kelvin Benjamin, he's more productive than people think, even if he's not nearly as efficient as anyone would want him to be.
Well, their quarterbacks have some similarities with their throwing downfield, not the most accurate, willing to let it go. And clearly those guys' top attribute is their size and height. So, I mean, I could see the comparison. All of us would rather have Evans, I'm sure, but I see the comparison.
Yeah, I think everyone would rather have Evans. I think if you take Price into it, I think Benjamin is maybe the more optimal way to go just because he's so much cheaper.
Yeah, it just seems like the cool thing really throughout his entire career is to make Kelvin Benjamin is fat jokes or Kelvin Benjamin right. is old jokes. We've probably all done that a time or two, but those pile up and those mount up and then it results in Benjamin falling to the sixth and seventh and eighth round of drafts, both dynasty and redraft leagues. His ADP is pretty similar, if I'm not mistaken. And that's a value at some point. So Matt, I get your thinking that you say you don't want to like him. He's not one of those players that you're necessarily excited to add to your roster. I mean, he has to be the favorite, even with these changes, to still lead the team in targets, catches, yardage, and touchdowns.
10 touchdowns goes a long way, and I like his chances to get 10 touchdowns.
Yeah. I'm curious on what you guys think about Curtis Samuel. I mean, it's really easy to compare him to Percy Harvin, given the role he played in Urban Meyer's offense. But really, they're two of the few guys to have that type of athletic profile and then also that type of production distribution, being productive as both a runner and a receiver. I like Curtis Samuel a lot. If things fell absolutely wrong and I had a pick at the bottom of the first round, Samuel would probably be the guy I would take. What are your thoughts on Curtis Samuel?
You want to handle that one first, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about Samuel as well. And I agree. I wouldn't necessarily have a problem taking him at the end of the first. So I also realize and recognize that makes me higher on him in Dynasty than most. Normally, I hate player comps. I'm not like a scout guy that can watch film and make these comps. But with these two players, McCaffrey and Samuel, just because of their unique styles, it has been fun trying to come up with that perfect comp for them through this draft process and early in their career. You mentioned McCoy on McCaffrey. The one I liked the best was Brian Westbrook. I think that fits pretty well. And a lot of people talk about Samuel and Percy Harvin, as you mentioned. To me, it's more of my guy, Randall Cobb. At Kentucky, he did a little bit of everything similar to Samuel there at Ohio State. And obviously, Cobb made a pretty smooth transition to being that full-time wide receiver. Mm-hmm. If Samuel has that kind of success, then that'll be a big hit for the Panthers, obviously. I mean, there's risk in making him your first round dynasty pick if you're talking about rookie drafts, just because of that transition. Wondering how that will play out with the Panthers. He's not necessarily very high on the pecking order there, in the short term at least. But I'm really surprised people have given up on him. I actually did a Twitter poll the other day, just looking at some rookie receivers in that range. And it was him, Galladay, Cooper Kupp, and somebody I'm forgetting, but he was far and away the last guy. I was pretty surprised.
Really?
Matt, what are your thoughts on Samuel?
They're mixed. I wish he was on my favorite football team. Well, he'll translate to fantasy points. You kind of mentioned that he's blocked early on, and I do see that. And I don't think his game is similar, but I could see him being their Ted Ginn this year too. As you're young, line up outside the numbers, run real fast, and sometimes Cam will throw a bomb to you. And I think he could do that in the short term. I would think that you want more from him than that, and Panther fans should as well, and the front office should as well. And he's certainly capable. I do think he's more Cobb, although faster. Than he is Ginn, but I could see them pigeonholing him in the Ginn role for now.
The one thing about the Cobb comparison, and so Player Profiler, they actually have as the closest comparable player Randall Cobb in terms of athleticism and also college production. So that comparison is definitely there. I think it's a little bit different in that Cobb was more of a wide receiver in his final season, Whereas Samuel and Percy were both more running backs in their final season. So I think he has a little more to go in terms of transitioning to the NFL. But they're definitely comparable players.
Matt, let's move on to Chicago. The Bears, last year we saw some surprising breakouts from Jordan Howard, Cameron Meredith. Are both of those guys for real? We've certainly accepted Howard as a valuable dynasty asset and redraft asset. Cameron Meredith, it seems to be more of a mixed review when it comes to how people are valuing him. Do you see those guys repeating that high-level performance?
It's interesting. So I like Jordan Howard a lot. I thought he was a great player in college. He's not a good receiver, and I think that is going to be something that hinders him. I think the Bears are going to need to throw the ball more, and he's not going to be the guy out there doing that. It's going to be Benny Cunningham or Tariq Cohen, who I think is flashed more than a lot of people thought he would, but who had some great college production and is a good athlete. But I do like Jordan Howard long-term. I just don't think he's going to be able to repeat because, he had good efficiency last year. I don't know if we can count on that again this year. And then he might not have the volume, especially as a receiver. Cam Meredith, I am all in on. I really like him a lot. Again, this is a guy who was just in his fourth year last year playing the position. So he started out as a college quarterback, transitioned as a redshirt junior, as a redshirt senior, broke out with 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns, has good athletic measurements, of course, didn't get drafted, because he hadn't really done much in college, just 1 year, so to speak, of production. Didn't do anything as a rookie, but last year he really flashed. And what impressed me was that, so I know that there's this narrative that he had all of his success in the slot, and this year he's going to be playing outside, and we're unsure about how he might do in that scenario. And that's fair, but not totally, because he actually had a lot of success playing out wide in his couple of games with Brian Hoyer. And then with Barkley, he had success playing inside. And in both of those situations, they moved him around the formation because he was filling in for other players, and that's where they needed him to play. But he had great success last year inside and outside. Basically, the only time he didn't have success was when Jay Cutler was on the field. And that might be, a Cutler thing. There are lots of ways you could think about why that might be the case. But he did well inside and outside last year. So as long as they treat him, it doesn't even need to be like the clear number one in comparison to Kevin White, but as long as they treat him as something like an equal, as long as they give him the targets, I think wherever he's lined up on the field, he's shown that he can do well.
I'm a believer in Meredith too. And to me, he's actually more of an outside receiver than he is a slot guy, just in terms of build, skill sets. I mean, I think he's closer to AJ Green than he is Wes Welker, or even a Marquise Colston type. I think mm-hmm. he'll flourish outside the numbers. And unless you think, unless you're a huge believer in Kevin White, I don't know why you wouldn't like Meredith. And the last nugget I have on the Bears, I was talking to someone very close to the team, and this is a little nugget for people out there, that the organization is really excited about Cohen. And I kind of slept on him in the draft process. But, man, I think if you can try to pick him up now, you might really be happy about it.
Yeah, I like that. And Matt, to your point, you're absolutely right in that what we saw out of Meredith last year on a per game basis, he had bigger production outside the numbers than he did when he was lined up in the slot. And we're talking about small sample sizes, so it's, the 2 games lined up outside with Brian Hoyer versus like the 5 or 6 games in the slot with Matt Barkley. But for those games, he had elite production. So there's nothing to say that he can't do it outside the numbers. The small evidence that we have shows that he's just as good, if not better, outside the numbers than in the slot.
Matt, let's move on to the Denver Broncos. It seems like for years, even dating back almost 20 years when Elway was there as a player, Denver's always been able to find these kind of under-the-radar running backs who – became fantasy starters and in some cases even became Hall of Famers. The latest case of that, of course, is CJ Anderson, but his star seems to be fading a little bit. Could D'Angelo Henderson be the next in line to earn that starting job and maybe become a fantasy relevant player as well?
Yeah, I think it's possible. He has this skill set in that he's a three down back. And although he's coming from, you know, a small school in Coastal Carolina, and although he's small, you know, only 5'8", he's thickly built, and he has good speed, good athleticism, and obviously the history of great college production there. The one thing that, you know, and Denver's playing a postseason game, sorry, not postseason game, their third preseason game soon. The one thing is to see how Jamal Charles does, because if Charles looks, I mean, it's hard to say he might look like the old Jamal Charles, but if he looks like a competent three down back, like a guy that you could give the ball to 8 to 10 touches per game, I think that might go a long way to keeping D'Angelo Henderson on the bench. Because I think if you have Jamal Charles mixing in as an efficient player, that gives CJ Anderson, I think, a little bit of a longer leash because they don't have to depend on him quite as much. And so they can give him, you know, 12 to 15 touches per game instead of really trying to use him as a workhorse.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking Denver, though, is kind of like poison to me. You know, like, yeah, maybe Henderson is the story this year. That's possible. I have no faith in Charles. But, man, I don't have good vibes about that offense at all.
So you're just avoiding
– I think.
Avoiding everybody? Does that include Sanders and Thomas?
They'll probably get a lot of targets, and I guess you want Simeon to be the quarterback because he knows what to do with the football. But I don't have a good feel for – I mean, it's not that I hate them or avoid them. I feel like I just don't have a good feel for that offense compared to the other 31.
Yeah, I can see that. They feel like a team who is resisting a rebuild. You know, they were in
– Sure.
They've been a contender, a strong contender in recent years. But you look at the team, their defense is basically getting worse every year. Still solid, but I think it's fair to say they're not what they were a couple of years ago. They don't have a long-term quarterback on their team, evidently. And unless Henderson hits, they probably don't have a long-term running back on their team either. And their two stars are both over 30. So it feels like they could go downhill quickly as a team overall.
Yeah, I buy that. Yeah.
Matt, with the Lions, you have said in your article that you could see Kenny Golladay being the best rookie wide receiver in this class. And I know that's not just not just a hot take based on his week two preseason performance. He's a player you've liked for a while. Tell us what you like about him and how you see his role playing out this year.
Well, you have to like his size and athleticism. So that's one of the first things. But on top of that is the college production. As a freshman, a true freshman, he was the third wide receiver on his team and had some decent production. And then as a sophomore, he led his team at North Dakota. His coach left, he transferred, so he had to sit out a year at Northern Illinois, but he moved up in competition, moving to the FBS. And then in his first year there, right away, he was the number one receiver on the team, led in receptions, touchdowns, receiving yards, and then did it again as a redshirt senior. So the 3 years in which he was the primary receiver on his team, he was productive with 1,000 yards on average and 10 touchdowns on average. One of the things that I think is really intriguing about him is that he had production as a runner. And then also even at North Dakota, he returned a punt for a touchdown. It's not as if we're going to see him do that in the NFL, but it's indicative of a type of skill set that he has that translates well to being a good receiver in the NFL. So those are the things I like about him. And then I think he does have a path to getting some playing time pretty early in his career. I don't think he's going to be, you know, like a 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown Mike Evans type of guy as a rookie. But I think he does have the capability of maybe having, you know, 6 to 8 touchdowns as the red zone threat for the Lions and, you know, anywhere from 600 to 800 yards receiving. Like, that's not bad. And then I think in his second year, he can just build upon that and crush.
Maybe. I'm really interested how Detroit plays football this year on offense. Is, you know, they've been really successful since Cooter took over, quote, reeling Stafford in, playing slow, not much of a running game, short passing game. What I thought was maybe the worst defense in the league last year that I think is going to remain that way, but they invest in the O-line. I still think they need to win shootouts, and I think the smart move is to let Stafford be Stafford a little bit more. I think he's to the point now where it has to be his team and, you know, throw downfield a little bit more, which I think, you know, favors the rookie a little bit.
Well, I think that's possible. I mean, that would be good news for the rookie. I mean, yeah. I'm trying to rein it in and my, you know, enthusiasm for the guy.
And Matt's just getting you even more pumped up for a guy you've already liked. Let's move to Jacksonville. This is a tough team to really look at as well. A quarterback controversy just born really in the second week of the preseason. We knew Bortles has not been good there for really over a year, or you could say his entire career possibly. But it was like week two of the preseason last week was the tipping point. Now they're looking at Chad Henne. They're considering all options, as they should be. Is there any hope for Bortles at this point, if you're talking about a dynasty league? Because you look at his, again, you just look at his stats, and he's been a top 10 quarterback, I believe, the past 2 years. But then you see his play on the field, and it's just among the worst in the league. So how should dynasty owners balance that out?
Well, I mean, I think dynasty owners, if you have Bortles, I think you're pretty much screwed, because I don't think anyone's going to trade for him because of how horrible he's looked. And I don't think you can really trust him because he's going to lose his job. And the thing is, I don't even think you had reason to trust him up to this point. So if you were getting production out of him, that's great for you. I think you were riding a fantastic hot streak. But long-term with Dynasty, I think you want to invest in talent. And I think Bortles is – it's not like he's talentless because he's in the NFL and I'm not. But in comparison to, you know, like other guys in the NFL, I don't think he has the talent to warrant being on a Dynasty roster. Yeah, I mean, I think if at some point he's going to be someone you drop because you know what he is and you're going to want to invest in someone else who might have potential.
Yeah, that's the question dynasty owners are facing, is simply should we just drop him? I've seen him dropped already in a couple of my leagues and nobody has picked him up. So there's and those are fairly deep leagues, deep rosters with at least 25 players per team. So, yes, dynasty owners are kind of just giving up on him.
The one note I just want to make on their guys for fantasy reasons is Henne, people look at him like, oh, he's a game manager. He throws a ton of interceptions too. I mean, that's not what he is. Maybe you get a little better at it as he gets older. But the one thing about Henne that we want from a wide receiver perspective, if you have Allen Robinson, I think you want Henne. Because he's a way better deep passer than Bortles. Bortles' deep ball was really frightening last year.
I like that analysis. I have a question for you guys about Dede Westbrook. I think I'm probably too high on him, and this is something that predates his preseason action. But, you know, the guy won the Biletnikoff. People look at what he did at Oklahoma as maybe a one-year thing, but that's not the case. I don't know how people feel about, you know, junior college production. I'm degenerate enough to obsess about that stuff. But, you know, if you look at what he did at junior college to get into OU, and then if you look at what he did in his two seasons at OU, you add all of that together, he was averaging 110 yards per game and a touchdown per game. Like he had, you know, like in 3 years, he had good college production. I think of him as kind of like a T.Y. Hilton-esque type of guy in terms of like that production and then his size and speed. And then he had, you know, a little bit of rushing production in college, returned a punt for a touchdown. You know, like I think he has some upside there. But the quarterback situation is trash. But how are you guys approaching Dede Westbrook?
I think he went from probably overrated as the dynasty asset really early in the process to very underrated. So if you were doing, and speaking of degenerate, if you were doing dynasty rookie mock drafts in November and December, like I was, D.D. Westbrook was a first round pick. So, you know, he was up there with, well, not quite with Mike Williams, but he was kind of in that 8 to 12 range in the first round. And that's how people were valuing him. And then as soon as the season ended, basically everything went wrong. These reports of injuries that no one ever knew about, reports of off-field issues that no one seemed to know about. He opted out of the Senior Bowl, which everyone viewed as a mistake for a player really trying to make a name and improve his stock. Matt, I don't know if you remember this, but in the couple weeks leading up to the draft, there were actually rumors or reports that he would completely go undrafted. I think he ended up in Jacksonville, despite the quarterback situation, in a really good spot. It looks like they've got a stacked wide receiver group, but Hearns and Lee, neither of those guys can really stay healthy. Hearns is reportedly on the trade block right now with that ugly contract they gave him last year. I love Dede in the slot. I came on too late for him. He's been scooped up in the third and fourth round by guys like Matt who were on him before me. But yeah, he's stock up for me big time.
100% agree. I mean, dynamic player, making big plays in the preseason. I don't think Hearns returns, and maybe even there next year. I don't think Lee returns. Does Robinson? I mean, I like him opposite Robinson, no matter who the quarterback is. And I always think that offense is going to be run the ball, deep shots, you know, and he's perfect for that.
Matt, in Houston, we've seen DeAndre Hopkins play at basically an elite level over the past few years before having a down year last year with Osweiler. But as you note in your article, he's never had even average quarterback play, you could say, unless you're a big Matt Schaub fan. But in your article, you list the quarterbacks that have ever thrown him an NFL pass, and it's a sad, sad list. Hopefully now he's got the quarterback upgrade, and we'll see how Deshaun Watson pans out. But do you value Hopkins as an elite fantasy asset, or were we maybe overvaluing him in the past couple of years when he was going in the first round?
I think he's still elite. I think he's in that sort of Larry Fitzgerald category of wandering in the wilderness, and you know, hopefully he gets a quarterback who can get the ball to him. But I think he's still elite, and maybe some of this has to do with the targets he was getting. And so, you know, that volume could maybe make him look like a better player than he was. But very few guys in NFL history have been more productive through their first four seasons. And so that's including like the disappointing fourth season that he just had. So not many guys have outproduced him through 4 years. And all of them had better quarterbacks throwing them the ball. So I think he's still someone that I want on my dynasty team. I won't be able to get him, you know, like I know I won't be able to get him. But if there are leagues where the owner is starting to sour and you can get him at a little bit of a discount, I think that's a sharp play.
So he's another one when I was on that podcast with Christopher Harris that I said overrated. And one of the reasons is I don't think he's an elite talent. I think he's a great guy that shows up on SportsCenter a lot and makes terrific catches and really good contested, but I don't think he ever gets consistent separation. I don't think he's a great speed guy. I don't think he's, you know, super talented. I kind of think he's maxed out as a player, and that's really good, but just not elite. I don't think he's a top 10 type wide receiver. And the other thing is he had like a 9 or 10 game stretch 2 years ago where they threw him the ball like 16 times a game. You know, like there was that crazy stretch where he was the most targeted guy in the whole league or even in the history of the league for that stretch. I just don't think that those will ever occur again.
Matt, we talk a lot about Hopkins and Allen Robinson, kind of pairing those two guys up. We just talked about the Jaguars. Those two players both kind of rose up the ranks in Dynasty over the past 2 years with their success, and now both of them are falling back down a little bit to closer to that second round range. If you're just comparing those guys head to head, assuming they have basically the same value, which one do you want on your Dynasty roster?
Man, I don't know. I think probably Robinson, because I think I can pay less to get him. And I think maybe he has just as much upside as Hopkins, but I don't know. I mean, I think I'd like either one of them at the discount, but I just probably go with Robinson, and I kind of can't believe I'm saying that.
Matt, let's finish up today with one of the biggest stories of the offseason with the Dallas Cowboys. Of course, the 6-game suspension for running back Ezekiel Elliott. And this is really the question that we're all facing, is just how to value him. What are you doing with him in Dynasty? Would you be a buyer? And in redraft, what round are you comfortable taking him, considering not only the 6-game suspension, but also the potential for a future suspension if he has any other issues?
Mm-hmm. I think in redraft, I'm comfortable with, like round 4, but he's gone before that. So I wouldn't be getting him in redraft. I think for Dynasty, I think he's still up there. I think, the market is going to value him that way because, if the market is thinking long-term, it's only 6 games. And, people saw what he did last year. They see that he has, kind of like all-time elite level talent. They're not going to want to trade that. And people in drafts are still going to want to get that because I think they still want to shoot for that upside. So I don't think this has really hurt his long-term market valuation all that much. But in terms of like my risk analysis of this situation, like, I wouldn't be trying to buy him low right now. I just don't think I'd be able to get him at the discount. And then two, like I don't want to have the risk built in with having him on my team. I would rather have, Le'Veon Bell, maybe even Jay Ajayi. Like I would rather have some other guys who don't seem as if they're at risk of really screwing up their life.
I studied the Dynasty trades pretty closely for my work over at DLF, and I haven't really seen much of a discount, maybe the discount you would expect. It almost seems like the discount is just that he's available in the first place. And 2 months ago, maybe he wasn't available at all. So the discount is that he's on the table, that talks are open. But as far as buying him low, I don't really see that happening. If you're trying to buy him for one random future first rounder, not going to happen.
Yeah, not happening.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for joining us today. Really great stuff. I loved reading your team previews over there and all of your work at Fantasy Labs. Tell our listeners where they can find all of your work.
So, yeah, on Twitter at Matt F. The Oracle, stuff will be published there. But, yeah, just at Fantasy Labs. And we're going to be coming out with the rest of these team previews, pretty fast and furious within the next 10 days. So, I'm editing some right now, and I've done research for the Patriots and the Saints. And so those should be coming out in the next few days.
All right. Great stuff. Thanks again, Matt. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.